recapitulation of how the pastime being narrated by Maitreya Muni is developing over, as we've been reading it over the past weeks. Narada Muni is preaching to King Prachini Barishat, who is engaged in performing many karmakandiya, fruit of activities, one sacrifice after the next, so spreading kusha grass everywhere, which is used in the performance of sacrifice. But his purpose is basically to obtain unending material happiness, which is the result of an incredible accumulation of material piety. But this is so far from spiritual happiness. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that if one, I'm quoting, I believe, from Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Bhagavatam, that if one takes the fullest extent of material happiness and multiplies it by thousands and thousands and thousands, it does not even, cannot even be compared to one drop of the pleasure available from Krishna's Brahman realization. And then if one multiplies the Brahman realization, that bliss, by millions and millions, it does not compare with even a drop of prema, prema bhakti. A drop of prema bhakti is bhava bhakti, bhavam, premankur is bhava bhakti. So what to speak of Krishna prema, prema pamarto mahan, which is the full manifestation of the soul's natural consciousness. And in this world we so readily trade that for the completely insignificant material satisfactions that are available. We will trade our glorious and noble attempt for the highest of spiritual perfections for something completely insignificant, which Dhruva Maharaj compared to pieces of broken glass. We think they are worthwhile, but they are only pieces of broken glass. They're not at all diamonds and jewels. So Narada Muni decided to be merciful to this descendant of Dhruva Maharaj, King Prachini Barishat. And he told them that you will suffer so much due to your performance of sacrifice, trying to accumulate material piety. And then he told them the story of Paranjana, the king it was the ideal life, the ideal marriage, and it was, you can't really say the ideal death, but everything turned against him at the end. And he was every living entity, Paranjana, because every living entity, regardless of how satisfied we are within the city of our bodies, the body is like a city. No matter how satisfied we are, the ultimate end is that it is crushed to dust, and then we have to move, we are forced to move on to another body. So Paranjana in his next life, due to his piety, material piety, he had a very good position. He became a queen, a woman, and born in the family of Vaidabha. And she married a very powerful king named Malayadwaj, and they had children. And eventually, there are actually allegories, and there are philosophical points that are made parallel to all this. So Malayadwaj was a great devotee, and his wife became a great devotee by his association. But then they went to the forest, he performed austerities, he left this world, and she was lamenting, and the super soul appeared to her, Avigyata, the long lost friend, and told her that she actually wasn't Vaidarbhi. She was in her previous life, she was a king. Just imagine if someone came to you and said, "You think this is you? Well, in your last life you were this, and your life before that you were that. Which one is you? Actually, none of them are you. They are bodies that we accept like the bodies we accept at night in a dream. We accept them when we're dreaming and then we give them up. To be fixed in that consciousness that this isn't me, and to develop attachment to Krishna were the instructions of whom? In the previous chapter in Sanat Kumara said, the essence of all scripture is really teaching these two things. Detachment from the bodily concept of life and attachment to Krishna. So then the Narada completes his telling the story, the pastime to Prachini Barishat. Prachini Barishat said, "Very nice, but I couldn't understand it. Please explain everything to me." So he explains everything, what this means, this and this means that. And then he explains that, "Please understand that you have been transmigrating." What does transmigrating mean? Rotating. What does rotating mean in this frame of reference? Wandering. In what way? From one body to the next, to the next, to the next. Just imagine, imagine yourself right now. You get very old, you're looking in the mirror, the face that stares back at you is unrecognizable. Someone else practically, because he's an old man, an old lady. Then the body dies, and then you take on another body. And then that body gets old and dies. It might not even be a human body. It might be a monkey body, a cow body. Sometimes a king's body, sometimes an ant's body, a bird's body, sometimes a male, sometimes a female. Beggar, rich man, poor man. Again and again, this is what Narada Muni is explaining to Prachini Barishat. And the solution that we heard yesterday, the only way to get out of this incredible forest fire of material existence, samsara dhava nalalita loka, is through devotional service. This is the way out, and we heard this yesterday. And the main, does anyone remember any of the points from the practice of devotional service that Narada explained to Prachini Barishat? There's two things stick in my mind.
Well, the repentance part.
Yes, yeah, we. Yes, and then what happens after repentance?
Prayer
in the form of chanting. The Hare Krishna mantra is a calling, but unless there is humility, just like if there is the negative pole of the magnet, if it is just neutral, it doesn't attract anything positive, but if it's negative, it has to be negative to attract the positive. All the bad feelings about ourselves that Kali Yuga gives us is actually a blessing if we use that to turn to Krishna. If we use that as a calling out to Krishna, or as impetus for calling out to Krishna. And so much emphasis was on taking shelter of spiritual master, and also on that which the spiritual master engages us in, as you mentioned, Sankirtan and service. And service certainly includes chanting and hearing. So much on hearing. So now, text 41. Because the conditioned soul is always disturbed by the bodily necessities, such as hunger and thirst, Continuous disturbance, this is what it means to be in a material body. I remember reading somewhere some years ago that 70% of all people who are 45 or some percentage, and 70 or 80% of all people who are 50, they're already starting to feel uncomfortable in their body. Uncomfortable means they're always conscious of one pain or another. So there are so many distractions. And what do these distract us to? They distract us to continuously thinking of our comfort or discomfort. And what does this distract us away from? We have no peace of mind and no ability to hear the Hari Nunam Katamrita Nidaratim. Very hard to gain this attraction, attachment to Krishna Katha, because there is always something distracting the mind. Very hard, difficult. Then Narada continues telling Pachini Barishat that this Krishna, because he had been performing so many ritualistic activities based on the Vedic injunctions, but he had missed the actual point of the Vedas. Vedas chasavar aham eva vedyo. By the Vedas, Krishna explains, it is I, Krishna explains, that is to be known. To be known, to meet, to know him, to develop a relationship with Krishna. This is the purpose of the Vedas. But this is very, very, very secret. This is the most secret of all secrets, the most confidential. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. So he explains, the most powerful Lord Brahma, Narada is explaining, the father of all the progenitors, Lord Shiva, Manu, Daksha, and the other rulers of mankind, the four saintly first-class brahmacharis headed by Shanaka and Sanatan, the great sages Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, and Vasishta, and my humble self. So all these great sages, and we see this if we examine the innumerable religious paths in the world, spiritual paths, religions, everyone. So these persons are all stalwart brahmanas who can speak authoritatively on Vedic literature. We are powerful because of austerities, meditation, and education. Today, if one wants to become powerful, one thinks one can do it not by austerity, meditation, education. One attends some seminar for a weekend or something like that and expects some incredible result. And it doesn't work like that. To gain something wonderful, one has to be wonderful. So these great personalities were wonderful. But nonetheless, Narada explains, even after inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we always see, we do not know perfectly about him. Very hard to understand Krishna. Because Narada is speaking like this because he wants Pachini Barishat to give up his attachment to using the Vedas. What's the verse in the second chapter? Nishtagunya Bhavarjana. What's the first line? Triguna Vishaya Veda Nishtagunya Bhavarjana. That this is all in the modes of material nature, trying to gain something of the modes of material nature. And if one wants to gain something of the modes of material nature, one cannot gain something transcendental at the same time beyond the modes of material nature. So he says, despite, Narada explains, despite the cultivation of Vedic knowledge, which is unlimited, and the worship of different demigods by the symptoms of Vedic mantras, demigod worship does not help one understand the supreme powerful personality of Godhead. Why? Bhaktyamam abhijananti. He is known only through devotion. And because when one loves someone, then that person, if one truly loves, then that person becomes trustworthy. And then the person whom one loves can reveal himself. He can trust. Due to the devotion, the person who loves captures the heart and mind of the Lord. But without devotion, it doesn't work. Krishna will not reveal himself. He will not explain himself. So Krishna is known only by devotion. So he's discouraging Prachini Bharishat from following the Vedas. When a person is fully engaged in devotional service, this is text 46, he is favored by the Lord. He gains the mercy of the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. So it is interesting. Causeless mercy means that there is no cause to it. There is nothing that makes it happen. But here, it explains that when a person is fully engaged in devotional service and gains the Lord's favor, then Krishna does give his causeless mercy. So how is it causeless then? Who will answer that question? How is it causeless? Yes, but it's not only that. There's certainly no material cause.
Because it's given by freely.
Yes. This is the point. There is, in logic, there is a term called necessary but not sufficient. So it's not that our devotion forces Krishna to bestow his mercy. But it makes Krishna inclined. And then Krishna, by the nature of his compassionate heart, therefore he gives his mercy. He decides. And then when Krishna bestows his causeless mercy on someone, at such a time the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. So one must give up the tendencies of karma and jnana because they are self-centered and become a devotee, he's explaining, and perform devotional service, not just service, but devotional service, service with devotion, seva, bhakti. And not just devotion, because not any service, because love, devotion, really means service. It is the most natural thing to want to please the other. My dear King Bharishman, you should never... This is text 47, Narada is saying, you should never, out of ignorance, take to the Vedic rituals or to fruit of activity, which may be pleasing to hear about, or which may appear to be the goal of self-interest. You should never take these to be the ultimate goal of life. And translating this to ourselves, we should never take anything as worthy of achieving other than pure devotion to Krishna. Everything else is durasraya, is a false shelter, or not give us what we are longing for. And as long as we do have other desires, then we will wander, brahmanda brahmate, we will wander throughout the material universes attempting to fulfill that desire. So we can look at our consciousness and see what we desire. We can make long, long, long lists of all the things that we desire and see if it is worth it. to stay in the material world, or do we want to go to Krishna? And it isn't so easy to give up the material desires. We may decide, oh, I don't want them anymore, but they are very stubborn. And Krishna will say, oh, really? You don't want them? Well, let's see. Have one of these. Have one of these. Would you like some fame, some beauty, some great talent? Do you want everyone to say how wonderful you are? What do you actually want? What do you actually want? Do you want knowledge? Do you want material opulence? Do you actually want heavenly pleasure? Who in the back is going like this? No. No, Sankirtan. You want Sankirtan. Because Krishna holds his devotional service very tightly. Because by that, especially his bhava bhakti, because by that, it is Rupa Goswami terms it as sudulava, because by that he is purchased. Krishna himself is purchased. Those who are less intelligent accept the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies as all in all. They do not know that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand one's own home, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead lives. Not being interested in their real home, they are illusioned and search after other homes. My dear King, the entire world is covered with the sharp points of kusha grass, and on the strength of this, you have become proud because you have killed various types of animals and sacrifice. Because of your foolishness, you do not know that devotional service is the only way one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot understand this fact. Your only activities should be those that can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. And then this in the next few verses and Prabhupada's purports talk about education, and clearly the Krishna consciousness movement and Prabhupada's society, ISKCON, is an educational institution meant to train people to understand this, that the purpose of life, our education should be that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness, to teach us how to actually attain Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato Mati, to teach us how exactly we can attain this platform of tasting the sweet taste of our relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada explains in his purport, to call a king, listen to what he says, remember this is a king. The king, what is it, when you think of a king, what do you think of? What are typical kingly opulences? Palace, power, what else? Armies, treasures. And what does he call him? He says, you have become proud because of your foolishness. You're a fool. He insults him directly. Why? Because he was thinking himself great for having performed so many sacrifices, but actually had missed the entire point. And Narada Muni wants him to stop this performance of sacrifice and do what? Engage in Krishna conscious activity. Give this up. So he continues. And this is interesting because in the next text, these texts 50 and 51 are the conclusion of this section. He explains that this is education. Education. And remember how in the previous purports Prabhupada had been quoting this Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Nena Mamupyantite, how Tesham satatayuktinam bhajatam priti bhova. By worshipping Krishna, Krishna helps. He gives one the intelligence and the ability through sincerity, through one's sincere devotion. He gives one the ability, the knowledge, the instruction that will lead us to Him. So this is tantamount, practically speaking, this is when Krishna becomes the educator, when the super soul is revealing everything. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita explains this? Another verse. I was thinking of Savasya Chamrita Sanavisto Mata Smitam Gyanam Aponam Cha. Krishna will give knowledge. He will give this. He will give the inspiration. He will tell us what to do to advance if that's what we want. And this is real education when Krishna is telling you what to do to be in touch with the super soul. And this was, again, this was the question that Vidura asked Maitreya Muni in the fifth chapter in the third canto, that how can I get direct instructions from Krishna to know what to do? And clearly one has to be very pure to attain this. So in text 50 and 51, Narada is going to conclude what he wants the king to do. He says in 50, Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the supersoul and guide of all living entities who have accepted material bodies within this world. And incidentally, he's telling them, you have killed so many animals in a faulty way, and they too have Krishna in their heart. This is cruel. You have Krishna in your heart, but they too have Krishna in their heart. Pandita Samadarshana. The wise person, the learned person, actually sees that Krishna is within everyone. So Krishna is there. He is the supreme controller of all material activities and material nature. He is also our best friend, and everyone should take shelter of his lotus feet. In doing so, one's life will be auspicious. And in the Prabhupada's purport, there are many verses, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, from Chaitanya Bhagavat. I'm not sure exactly what's going from, you know, from different parts of Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Vrindavan Das Thakur, or I think it's maybe Mahaprabhu talking in some of the places, is saying how education really means to know Krishna. The perfect result of an education is the fixing of one's mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. If one engages himself in devotional service, his education is perfect. Education is not theoretical knowledge. Krishna conscious education and study of Shastra, it is not theoretical, it is meant to be applied. The purpose, another one, the purpose of education is to understand Krishna and his devotional service. Being cultured, educated, very active and religious means developing natural love for Krishna. So this is the purpose of actually of the study of the Bhagavatam, of the study of the Bhagavad Gita, of the study of Chaitanya Charitamrita, to inflame our love for Krishna, to give us guidance, to associate with Narada Muni, Maitreya Muni, Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, the great Acharyas, so that we get guidance and inspiration and purification so we can develop our love for Krishna. So he continues, and this is the end of the summary of this section, where he's telling them that you give up these fruit of Vedic sacrifice, give up fruit of activities, give up acting to gain something else, because that something else that you're attempting to gain will bring no satisfaction to your heart. Give it up. And he concludes this section by saying, one who is engaged in devotional service, savai priyattamas chatma yato na bhayam manvapi iti veda savai vidvan yo vidvan sa gurur hari. One who is engaged in devotional service has not the least fear in material existence. Think about that. Out of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, the most troublesome is fearing, defending. Because everyone in the material world is trying to make believe and find a secure position for themselves. And in fact, there is no secure position. The secure position is Ayi Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Oh Lord, I am somehow or another have fallen into this ocean of material misery. But please engage me. And somehow I'm thinking as if I'm a non-devotee right now. I'm convinced. But please again engage me as your servant. Please accept me as your servant. So why is it that such a person who's engaged as Krishna's servant, who's secure in Krishna's service, has no fear in material existence? This is because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supersoul and friend of everyone. He is the Supreme Lord, He is the Supreme Controller, and He has so much affection for everyone, each and every one of us. So then what is to fear if the one who is omniscient, who knows everything and omnipotent, who's all-powerful, wishes to care for you? What is to fear? One who knows this secret is actually educated, and one thus educated can become the spiritual master of the world. One who is an actually bona fide spiritual master representative of Krishna is not different from Krishna, because he's giving the same instructions as Krishna. External manifestation and in the heart, the internal Chaitya Guru. So 52, now Narada is going to continue. O great personality, I have replied properly about all that you have asked me. Now hear another narration that is accepted by saintly persons and is very confidential. So Narada Muni has just told the story of Paranjana. But it is quite long and quite dramatic. He has everything, the perfect situation, the king, the city, the beautiful wife, devoted wife, who helps him with his enjoyment, so many children, etc., etc., etc. But then it was all crushed. And then, but now, because Prachini Barishat has not understood perfectly, and he is not quite ready to give up his fruit of activities and just drop it, because he's thinking that he had sent, you have to have been following what's going on, but he had sent his sons, the Prachetas, away to, they were performing austerities to prepare to rule the kingdom. And he was wishing naturally to wait for them to come back so he could hand over the kingdom to them, tell them where all the gold is buried, tell them the secrets of ruling or whatever. But Narada Muni wants him to leave now. And indeed, he's going to do it. Because when one gets... one actually realizes this transcendental knowledge, one doesn't say, oh, I have to wait for this and I have to wait for that, because he sees things from a different perspective. The whole, what to speak of the kingdom, the universe appears insignificant. He wants him to leave now. So he's going to tell him he told the long story of Paranjana. And now he's going to tell a very short story with a short explanation. But I would like you to listen carefully and picture what is being said. It's one verse only. Picture what this verse is, what he's saying in this allegory. My dear king, okay, you can picture that too. Narada Muni is speaking to the king. Please search out that deer. Now think of a deer. What does a deer look like? What does a deer look like? Yes? Well, what does a deer look like? Yes?
White brown color,
pointed ears, big eyes. Yeah, very pretty, and it's very delicate. That deer who is engaged in eating grass, what color is the grass? Very peacefully. Not a violent animal. You never hear, read in the newspapers how some man is walking in the forest and he's killed by a wild deer. Attacked. No. He's peacefully in a beautiful flower garden along with his wife, the female deer, whose eyes are still bigger. And they're just peacefully eating the grass there, the green grass. That deer is very much attached to his business, being with his beloved wife and just enjoying the green, fresh green grass. And he's enjoying the sweet singing of the bumblebees in his garden. Just try to understand his position. So from one point of view, it is so comfortable and so nice, idyllic. His nice garden, the sound of the bees, the innocent deer, the fresh grass, his doe wife. But he's unaware that before him is a tiger. Undoubtedly a hungry tiger, which is accustomed to living at the cost of another's flesh. The tiger is stalking him and wants to kill him and eat him. And behind the deer, so in front of the deer is the tiger, crouched low, glaring at him with fixed eyes. And he's peacefully enjoying his grass and the sound of the bumblebees. Bzzz, with his doe, gentle wife, and their big eyes. And the tiger has his eyes fixed on him. Have you ever seen a cat, even when he has his eyes fixed on his prey? It is cold. There is no emotion, only the desire to kill. There is not the slightest trace of compassion. He only sees one thing, the prey he's going to kill. So in front of the deer is the tiger, and behind the deer is a hunter whose arrows are drawn, and he's threatening to pierce him with his sharp arrows. So what chance does the deer have? Even if the tiger growls, he'll run in the opposite direction, right towards the hunter. Or if he sees the hunter, the sun glints on the arrowhead or something, and he'll run the other way, he runs right to the tiger. What chance does he have? He is caught. The deer's death is certain and it's imminent. It's going to happen very, very soon.
Narada Muni continues to explain this very short but very graphic verse. My dear king, woman who is very attractive in the beginning, but in the end very disturbing. All the ladies should close your ears or you can transform it the other way around if you like. Is exactly like the flower, which is attractive in the beginning and detestable at the end. With woman, the living entity is entangled with lusty desires. The idea, and there's certainly nothing against women, because this is all, he's talking about souls here. Everyone has been man, everyone has been woman. And Paranjana himself was a man, and then he became a woman. But the idea is that when we're trying to enjoy in the material world, the prime object of enjoyment is the member of the opposite sex. To enjoy. This is when the prakriti, the living entity, he's in the mood of purusha then. Purusha prakriti sto hi. In trying to enjoy that which is produced of the material energy. So the living entity is entangled with lusty desires and he enjoys sex just as one enjoys the aroma of a flower. He thus enjoys a life of sense gratification from his tongue to his genitals. And in this way, and this is just what happened with Paranjana, he was thinking himself so happy, so happy, so happy. Everything is here. Everything is here. And he did not notice that day by day, night by night, his life was being stolen away, his opportunity was being lost. And what was the opportunity? To develop his love for Krishna. So in this way, the living entity considers himself very happy in family life. United with his wife, he always remains absorbed in such thoughts. He feels great pleasure in hearing the talks of his wife and children, which are like the sweet humming of bumblebees that collect honey from flower to flower. He forgets that before him is time, like a tiger, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. This is the story of Paranjana compressed. Just like if we took a man's life who lived for 80 years, and even if he was a very powerful, wealthy, beautiful, famous, happily married man with beautiful children, perfectly successful, and you took his life of 80 years from his birth to his death, and you sped that life up so you could see the whole thing in 1 minute, or 30 seconds, you would see him become old and die so quickly. And you would understand so quickly that from the very beginning, even when for a few seconds he was so little and cuddly, death had been stalking him the whole time. So he forgets that before him is time, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life. So he's telling Prachini Barishat this because he wants him to give up this fruit of mentality right now. So he doesn't see that his life is diminishing. He doesn't care about the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, who is trying to kill him from behind. That's the hunter. He's stalking him also. Just try to understand this, he says. You are in a precarious position and are threatened from all sides. And what is the deer trying to do? Okay, I know I'm going to have to die one day, but at least let me finish this last piece of grass over here because it's so sweet and tender. And Narada is trying to convince him, no, don't wait for anything. You don't know what's going to happen next. There is no guarantee. No one has a guarantee of how long they are going to be within his body. Sri Radharaman found that one out. So one should be intelligent enough to see the future. My dear king, just try to understand the allegorical position of the deer. Be fully conscious of yourself and give up the pleasure. Give up the pleasure of hearing about promotion to heavenly planets by fruit of activity. Give up hearing about anything that is going to distract you from life's purpose. That will make you think that your position isn't precarious in the material world. That, oh yes, I have so many things. Yes, later. Give up household life, which is full of sex, as well as stories about such things. Get rid of the mood of enjoyer, because that will force you to take birth after birth after birth, which means death after death after death. And take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the liberated souls. In this way, please give up your attraction for material existence. So, we've talked about the point that what does one do if one is aspiring to be a devotee, one's a sadhaka, one's trying, but sees that he has material desire, should he just jump quickly to this side and make believe that he has no material desires? And there's a great danger that that if he goes like this too quickly, very soon he'll just, sooner or later he'll just boing, spring back, and then hold on to those material things with great fear, even tighter. So we've talked about this point, that a devotee's situation is different. Because what he has to learn to do is not be frivolous and engage in material activities, but he has to learn how to channel his material tendencies in such a way that they bring him closer to Krishna and not further from Krishna. Unless one is very, very strong, one cannot quickly renounce. But if one has strength, one should do it. And all this should be done under the guidance of Guru and Shastras and Vaishnavas. So exactly what is the best position for me to be in should be determined by the doctor. He prescribes specifically what is the way that we can make the quickest advancement, but it will always, always, it must, oh, there are common elements. Whatever position one is in, externally, is not so relevant, but what is relevant is to, is tene stita sutagatam tanaman manobhya, is to hear about Krishna and become detached from the bodily concept of life, and become extremely detached from considering that the purpose of life is to enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Because that will never happen. It will never happen. It is mythology. The materialists sometimes will say, Krishna, that's Hindu mythology. But actually, the materialists are the ones who believe in mythology. The materialistic dream for a happy life is mythological. It does not exist. It cannot exist because the tiger and the hunter are stalking every embodied soul. So where is the question of a happy, idyllic, prosperous life? That vanishes with the blink of the eye. So the king replied to all this, "My dear Brahmana, whatever you have said, I have heard with great attention. And considering all of it, I've come to the conclusion. And one other point. I always think of, there is, when we are taking the gradual path of using our material nature to become detached from the bodily concept of life and attached to Krishna, we should remember that there is an hourglass, and the sand of our life. We all have a certain amount of sand up here, and it has been going through that little hole, and we don't know how much remains up there. So everyone should keep this in mind, that we should not waste time, in other words, because we don't know how much time we actually have. And even if we have a full life to 70, 80, 90, one has to be very serious to develop his attachment to Krishna. One has to use his time very wisely. This is one test of a wise person, how he uses his time. Prabhupada, I remember hearing him walking on somewhere, on some beach somewhere, and he was watching all the people on the beach. They were playing this game, they were swimming this way, they were doing this exercise, they were talking about this. They were an amusement park nearby, a golf course nearby. And he said, just see, they are trying to invent so many ways that one could waste his time pleasurably. And we are working so hard to tell them, don't waste time. Use your life responsibly, your time responsibly. Just see the difference between the golf courses and the this car and windsurfing and the this surfing and the just unlimited ways to waste time. And we don't know how much time we have. So the king heard this and replied, "My dear Brahmana, whatever you have said, I've heard with great attention. And considering all of it, I've come to the conclusion that the acharyas, the teachers who engaged me in fruitive activities, did not know this confidential knowledge. I was instructed, this wasn't my idea only, but I was instructed by the Brahmin priests, the teachers, the educators, that I should perform one sacrifice after the next, after the next, after the next. And obviously they did not know this, what you are teaching me." And I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that this type of teaching, which creates a deep aversion to the material world, is not actually pure bhakti. This is karma, jnana misra bhakti. Pure bhakti is neutrality when dealing with the material world. And seeing it, vairagya vidinija bhakti yoga shiksharka meka purusha pran. To see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach this, to show how this material world is not to be renounced, but to be used in Krishna's service, because it is Krishna's. How could we renounce something that's not ours? How could I say, I'm so detached and renounced that when I walk from here, I'm not going to take Madhavendra's computer? Is that any renunciation on my part? No, it's not mine. There's no renunciation, nothing to be proud of. It's not mine. So how can we renounce the material world that's not ours? We should use it properly in Krishna's service because it is His. That is yukta vairagya, that is the proper. But this particular preaching, and it is not that we don't need it, this type of heavy bringing to the forefront of our consciousness, not to waste time and not to be entangled in material life and to keep death in front of us. We need this. We need these type of remembrances.
But yet,
these give birth to renunciation in the heart, but for bhakti, neutrality when viewing the material world is the most perfect view of the material world. Neutrality, not see it, I want it, and not see it, I hate it. Neither icha nor dvesha. Rather to see if this is Krishna's, let me use it. So, these people, these teachers did not understand your teachings, these teachings. If they were aware of it, why did they not explain it to me? This is the king's reply to all that Narada Muni has told him. My dear Brahmana, there are up to 59 is that reply. There are contradictions between your instructions and those of my spiritual teachers who engage me in fruitive activity. I now can understand the distinction between devotional service, knowledge, and renunciation. And truly, in this world, very few people, be they spiritualists, materialists, religionists, understand what true these type of instructions of Narada Muni, that we are not, that the perfection is not to try to attain anything on the material level or even on the spiritual level, in the sense of becoming one with the Supreme and losing one's individuality and losing all sense of misery by doing that. People have a very difficult to understand what exactly pure devotional service is, and it is very rare, very rarely understood, and very, very rarely achieved. Anyabhilasita sunyam. No other desire other than to please Krishna. This is love for Krishna. So he continues saying, I had some doubts about them, but about knowing the difference between devotional service, knowledge, and renunciation. But now you have kindly dissipated all these doubts. I can now understand how even the great sages are bewildered by the real purpose of life. Of course, there is no question of sense gratification. So life's it's so obvious to all of us who are sitting here right now, life's purpose isn't to enjoy the senses. But this is, if you were running for the president of a country or something like that, and you said, if I'm elected, everyone will understand that life's purpose is not sense gratification, not economic development, not sense gratification, not even to perform religious rituals. How many votes would you get? Not many, because people are, their only interest is these things. The result of whatever a living entity does in his life or enjoyed in his next life. Very heavy concept. The result of what we do in this life, we will attain that in our next life. Spiritual, materially good, materially terrible. We hurt others, we will be hurt. We are kind to others, people will be kind to us. We are charitable, we will get charity. We are miserly, we will get nothing. We become spiritually advanced, we will get a spiritually glorious next birth. What we do now, and we have freedom, or else what would be the purpose of the sages speaking the Bhagavatam and giving the Vedic literatures if we didn't have freedom, if these things couldn't affect us, give us knowledge and freedom to make good choices? What would be the use of presenting it if there could be no result? So what we do now affects what we will get. The expert knowers of the Vedic conclusion says that one enjoys or suffers the results of his past activities. Because he's hearing about, this is the king speaking, because he's heard about reincarnation. But, so he says, yes, But I have a question. But practically, it is seen that the body that performs the work in the last birth is already lost. So how is it possible to enjoy or suffer the reactions of that work in a different body? I do something with this body, good, bad, then the body turns into dust. So how is it? Is it the dust? It's all stored in the dust? The reactions of what I do, what remembers it? So how do I get the reactions for what happens in this life, the fruit, good and bad, in one's next life? How does one become a... There's a soul in there. There is a soul in there. What does one have to do to become a lizard in Vrindavan?
Have no will to dance in the sun.
Maybe. But probably not. There's probably more to it than that. This one wants the shelter of Krishna or something. Prabhupada's purport to 58. We read the text of 59. A person generally does not know how one body is linked with another body. How is it possible that one suffers or enjoys the results of activities in this body, in this body, in yet another body in the next life? This is the question the king wants Narada Muni to answer. How may one have a human body in this life and not have a human body in the next? Even great philosophers and scientists cannot account for the transfer of karma from one body to another. As we experience, every individual soul has an individual body, and one person's activities or one's body's activities are not enjoyed or suffered by another body or another person. The question is how the activities of one body are suffered or enjoyed in the next. So I think we should begin this section, Krishna willing, tomorrow. And in this section, there is a description of transmigration, which is the most detailed that I've seen. The Bhagavad Gita in chapter 8, in just a few verses, describes the transmigration of the soul. The mechanisms by which a soul moves from one body to the next. But these verses will describe it in far more detail. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Sankirtan.
Yes, for example, you mentioned that Vishwanath Chakravarti.
I think it was Vishwanath, but it was one of the commentators.
This instructions of Narada Muni are the category of Kavimishra Bhakti.
Jnana Misra Bhakti. Jnana Misra. The question, yes, that he was just confirming that he had. Yes, let me just hear what the question is.
The preaching really is still off the enjoying mentality, which means basically.
So you have to do this. You have to give up the enjoying mentality. You have to see the world in a negative way. And he wasn't qualified to hear anything but that. Do you remember the comment, Adi, exactly? He wasn't qualified to hear instructions for pure bhakti at this time.
So we gave him Jnana Misra instructions which are conducive for liberation.
So we gave him Jnana Misra instructions which were conducive for liberation because they bring renunciation to the heart. So they're very, very heavy. Did you understand the question that he asked? They're heavy to show you that there is no positive future in your attempt to enjoy the material world. But on the other hand, the Vaishnava instruction is Vishrapona Sukhayate, that the material world is a place of full happiness. So if he told that, which is the ultimate Vaishnava instruction to King Puchini Barishan, it would have entangled him deeper. But yet there was bhakti in there, but there was so much renunciation mixed in there.
What has to be the real renunciation takes place as a matter of attitude, that everything is Krishna's and meant for His service. Any other questions, comments?